In state exhibit 21, this version, the defendant mentioned including an article and a tape. Did he also submit to you article and tape?
Yes, he would send me relationship tapes and an article for that relationship.
And did you respond to that letter, state 21?
I didn't listen to the tape, no.
And did you ever write him back after he had written you these letters?
No, never.
Next exhibit, may I approach one?
You may.
It's state exhibit 22. We published that first page of state 22. Ms. Gruden, can you tell us what is the date of state exhibit 22?
11/20/96.
And how is that reflected on the document?
It's written in the top right-hand corner.
Is it handwritten or typed?
It's handwritten.
Ours looks like it's cut off a little bit on the computer. Might I approach and take that note? Is it where my finger is?
Yes.
My left hand. Is that the defendant's handwriting? Is this letter, state exhibit 22, similar in nature to the other letters?
Yes.
I want to refer to you on the second page of state exhibit 22, the second full paragraph. And if you could bring that up, Mr. Hudson. Could you read that to the members of the jury, please?
I'm sending this because I'm truly concerned about where my feelings are going, because every time I hear that someone else has seen you out on a date, or someone has seen you at breakfast with some guy, or I hear rumors about what you are doing, I step a little further away from you. Every time I have a date, I step further away from you. I did not want this scenario, so understand in my mind, me having a date is a huge step. A problem is I have no real idea what's going on between you and other men. Multiple dates with one person leads to expectations which do not bode well with me. Knowing his history and reputation, this is especially true with a person such as Dave. All these questions just cause even more of a rift between us. If things with other men are getting sexual for you, I will never be able to forgive that considering we are married.
The person he mentioned in that letter, Dave, who is Dave?
David Coffin, Jr.
In November, well, by November 20th of 1996, were you dating David Coffin, Jr.?
I was.
Could you tell the members of the jury when you began dating David Coffin, Jr.?
I believe we went on our first date towards the end of the first week of October 96.
How did you meet him?
I had sort of known who he was because he was friends of a friend. So I had seen him at parties in the past. So I was aware of his first name, and he was in the recycling industry and I was in the waste service industry, so it was sort of complementary industries, and we had talked in the past. So I sort of vaguely knew him. In 96, a friend of mine, Clayton Turner, said that he was going out to dinner with friends. Did I want to come? So I went out, and David Coffin was there.
Clayton Turner, was he also a friend of the defendant?
He was friends with all of them.
And had the defendant met Dave prior to November 20th of 1996?
He attended the same parties that I'm talking about, so I think he was new baby.
At some point, may I please wait, Mr. Turner?
You may.
Clem, you have been previously admitted into evidence of case exhibit 4. That we are here for the record. Do you recognize the person in case exhibit 4? Is that the person that you were dating?
It was, yeah.
And did you call him David or did you call him Dave?
Mostly David.
Did others refer to him as David?
I believe so, yes.
Did the defendant become aware prior to November 20th of 1996 that you were dating Dave?
Yes, he asked me, I believe, in mid-October, early, right after we sort of began to casually see each other. He questioned me about David.
Okay, and what did he say to you?
He asked if I was dating David, and I said we'd gone out a couple of times.
What was his response at that time with you dating David?
He said that he didn't think that David was a very good choice, that he considered him a womanizer, and felt that he's not the type of person I should be hanging out with.
Did you respond to that?
Yeah, because I knew that Scott sort of knew David, I said, if it's going to upset you too much, I won't date him.
Why did you offer that?
At that point, his feelings were more important than a date.
Whose feelings were?
That David's feelings.
So what was his response when you offered at that point not to date Mr. Coffin anymore?
He said he couldn't really tell me what to do at this point, but he didn't think that that was a very good choice for me.
Did you continue to see Dave after that conversation with the defendant?
Yes, I did.
At some point, did you have another conversation with the defendant about your seeing David Coffin?
Yes, I believe it was towards the end of October, beginning of November. He became quite distressed that I was still seeing David, and he would call me constantly and question my relationship with David. At that point, I told him it was no longer any of his business, and he asked that I stop seeing David, and I said no.
Why was it at that point no longer any of his business?
I was done with it. You know, I was not going back, and I didn't like David, and I wanted to see, I wanted to go out with David. I did not want to go back to my marriage.
May I first remember? Continuing on with the letters, date 23, is that letter dated?
No.
Okay. And you see a reference at the beginning of page 23 that allows you to put a date and time to the letter.
He talks about, I wanted to send you a letter right before Thanksgiving.
And would that be Thanksgiving of 1996?
It would be, yes.
And attached to page 23, is there another statement from the defendant?
Yes, there is.
First of all, if you could just tell us, I'm not going to make you read the entire letter, but if you could, in general terms, tell us, is that letter similar to the two letters that you have read to us in its entirety?
Yes.
And at the end of the letter, what does he attach to the letter?
He attaches Scott Davis's personal mission statement. He talks about the tape, relationship tape that he is missing.
And the personal mission statement, could you read that to us, please?
Scott Davis's personal mission statement. As a husband, I will be understanding, supportive, and caring. I will be unselfish in my decisions and my choices in my relationships. I will treat my wife as the most important person in my life. I will consult her on any major decision, and I will listen to her advice. I will work hard to have the intimate and caring relationships that I want. I will give her unconditional love and support. I will be faithful and honest to her at all times. Her cares, feelings, and desires will be my cares, feelings, and desires as well. When I get frustrated and upset with her, I will remember how much I love her and why I married her so that we can work any problem out together. As a father, I will be around for my children. I will be a guardian, a teacher, and a coach to all of my children. I will make sure my children grow up with the proper amount of supervision and discipline so they know how to succeed in life. I will make sure my children are well educated and know the value of education. I will show my children a lot of love, attention, and affection. I will support them in their goals and desires in life. As a son, I will be more attentive to my parents' wishes. I will make an effort to call my parents at least twice a week. I will invite them over to my house for dinner at least once a month. I will exercise with my dad at least once a week so we can spend time with him and so he can continue to be healthy. I will tell my mom I love her every time I talk to her. As a brother, I will do more things with my brother and his wife. I will invite them to do more things such as going to dinner or going to sporting events. I will help my brother any way I can. As a friend, I will be unselfish to my friends. I will be generous with my time and with my money. My friends' choices will weigh heavily in my decision. I will support my friends in times of trouble and times of need. I will be honest to my friends and not perpetrate rumors that I hear. As a child of God, I will try to understand faith and the power of God in one's life. I will attend church on a regular basis. I will listen to the Word of God and try to apply those disciplines in my everyday life. I will be honest to myself and those around me. As a consultant, I will do the best job I possibly can for my clients. I will give 100% effort in making my project successful. I will treat my coworkers with respect, and I will listen to their opinions and ideas. I will pay attention to my coworkers' personal lives and try to be a mentor to at least 3 people. I will continue to raise my income by at least 10% every year.
He wrote that and gave that to you how much after he found out that you were dating David talking to you?
Well, this would be probably a month afterwards.
Yeah, I think you can do it. Take exhibit 24. Again, I'll just ask, I'm not going to ask you to read the whole thing, but is it similar to the other letters that you have read to us?
Yes.
And it came during your separation as well, that letter, page 24.
Yes.
Take exhibit 25. Is that letter dated?
Not that I've seen that.
Okay, and can you tell why it's written on the second page of the letter? And the last paragraph about approximately when that letter was written?
He talks about all the holiday events and an Anderson Christmas party, so I'm assuming it's the end of November or the beginning of December 96.
And with that letter, did he attach some reading material for you to consider?
He did.
And what was the reading material regarding?
It regarding depression and what it does to people. And he highlighted things for me to read.
And when you were receiving these letters in Sweden between September and December of 1996, were you reading them in their entirety at that time?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. They seemed really, really repetitive. And so sometimes I would skim them, and sometimes I would sit down and read them.
Moving off of the cards which are in front of you. The cards that are in front of you, I believe, exhibit 29, exhibit 28, and 27, and 30. Could you tell me over the jury approximately the time frame when these cards were sent?
They were sent during our separation, so it would have been between September 06 and December 06.
And do you have a
96, sorry.
And do you have an envelope for one of the cards?
I do, yes.
And did that face exhibit 26? So the press commissioner published that, Your Honor?
Aye.
He's the doctor. Are you out?
No, sorry.
No objection.
What's already been admitted?
Patricia.
You see the post mark on the face exhibit 26?
Yes, I do.
And with your pointer, could you see the 26? And what was the date of that?
13th of November, 1996.
So, this exhibit 31. Maybe harder to see on the document camera. I may have to give it to you by hand. First of all, do you see your name on there?
I do.
And that address, was that a work address or a home address?
It was my work address.
And is that the Senate handwriting?
It is.
I don't know if you can read it from where you're sitting, but can you read the date on that postmark or do you need that?
I would definitely, yes.
Can I approach you on that?
December 05, 1996.
Did you get any spousal support? No, you are both parents, children, so that's not an issue. Did you get to keep your car?
I did, yes.
Did you get to keep your car?
We did, yes.
What happened to your marital residence?
It was sold.
Okay. And what happened to the proceeds?
It was the loans to our parents were repaid. The realtor was paid, taxes were paid, and we also had to pay deductible for insurance, and that was paid, and then I believe we left a couple hundred dollars between me and I.
What happened to your debt?
We both kept our individual credit card debt.
So everything that you had originally asked for in 1996 when you filed, was that what ended up happening in the end?
Yes.
While we were separated, you told us about being David Hoffman, Jr. Did you date Hoffman as well?
When I first got into marriage, I went on casual dates with about three other people, but David Hoffman was the only person that I had a relationship with.
What do you mean by casual dates?
Going out to dinner casually.
And the three people, do you remember who they were?
I went to dinner with a person named Bill Howell. I went out several times with a man named Tom Trapp. And I believe I went out a couple of times with a man named Jimmy Barron.
Let's start with the last one. It was that Jimmy Barron. Who is he?
He had a morning radio program in Atlanta. And I met him at a political event. And he took me out to dinner.
Anything serious with him there?
No.
Tom Trask, who is he?
He's a lawyer in town.
How many times did you see him?
Well, we went out together sort of several weeks in a row, maybe 3 weeks in a row, kind of sporadically.
Was that before or after you were seeing David?
It was before I was seeing David.
And what about Jimmy Barron?
Before or after David? It was before I was seeing David.
And what about Bill Howell?
That was before David.
And Bill Howell, who is he?
He's a friend that lives in New York to me.
And did you travel to New York to see him?
I did.
And when was that?
I believe that was September 96.
Would that have been before or after you began dating David?
Before.
Anything serious with Bill Howell?
No. I stayed with a girlfriend and her husband in New York, and he took me out to dinner, mostly because I was complaining at the time about the defendant and the series of phone calls, and he suggested I get out of town and have some fun, and so I took him up with that offer and went to New York, and we went out to dinner.
And did you tell the defendant that you were going to New York?
No, I did not.
Why not?
Well, at the time, he was calling me constantly, and he was calling all my friends and family. At that point, he'd even called my godfather in England. And
was that Buzz?
Yeah, that was Buzz.
Okay, the person that we heard about in the letter.
Yeah. And I just wanted a weekend of peace. And I knew if I told them, he would call my friend Catherine's house all the time.
Describe for us your relationship with David.
It was nice. He was a really great, fun, nice guy, and I was having a really good time with him. It was a nice, refreshing experience after my marriage. He was beautiful, and that was nice. But it was still in the dating phase. He hadn't defined it, if that's what you mean.
When you said dating phase, how often would you see him from the time he began dating in October till his death in December? How often did you see him?
October, it would start out slowly, maybe once, twice a week kind of thing. By November, certainly by the end of November, we were seeing each other three and four times a week. It was at the point where he would say things to me like, what are we doing this weekend? Things like that. So it was becoming more of a couple kind of relationship.
Did you ever discuss with David whether your relationship was exclusive?
No, we never did.
Do you know if David was dating another woman?
I have no idea.
While he was dating you?
I have no idea.
Did you and David ever declare your love for one
another? No, we did not.
Did you ever move in with him or he ever move in with you?
No.
Have you been to David's home?
I have, yes.
And how many times would you recommend?
Probably 10, 11 times.
And I don't mean to embarrass you with this question, but I need to ask it. Did you ever spend the night?
Yes, I did.
And did David ever spend the night at your apartment at Columbia?
Yes, he did.
And had things between you and David eventually gotten sexual?
It had, yes.
Were you familiar with David's house?
I was, yes.
Were you familiar with whether he had a dog door at his house?
Yeah, he had a dog door in his study slash office.
And could you tell members of the jury approximately how large was the dog door?
It was a pretty big door.
I mean, I'm not good at that either. Samantha asked me if John can help us out with her machine.
He had a large dog prior to our relationship. And it was, I think it was a large golden retriever type dog.
Was the dog door still open or was it locked?
I thought it was open.
Was the dog door big enough for you to fit into?
I never tried, but it looked like it, yes.
Were you familiar with the cars that David drove?
I was, yes.
What kind of cars did he drive?
Mainly, he had a white Jeep Cherokee. But he also had a Porsche convertible that he drove mainly on weekends. He also had an older model BMW, but I believe that was knockable.
What color was his Porsche?
It was red.
Ms. Rubin, I'd like to direct your attention to the night of the fire at David's house. Do you remember what date that was?
It was Tuesday, the 10th of December, 1996.
Tuesday the 10th, I want to talk to you about the weekend before. Okay, so just to give you a frame of reference, okay? So you know where I'm going.
Okay.
Friday night, December 6th of 1996. Yes. Did you see David Coffin that night?
I did.
Okay, could you tell us what you did?
A friend that I worked with in the Lawrenceville office was having a Christmas party. He attended the Christmas party with me for a while. Then we headed back to Buckhead to a Mexican restaurant and met up with some of his friends. And then we went back to my apartment.
Did David spend the night at your apartment that night?
He did.
When he would spend the night at your apartment, what vehicle would he drive?
It depended on what we were doing, but sometimes it was Porsche, but he didn't feel comfortable leaving the Porsche there. So mainly it was the Jeep Cherokee.
When Friday night, did you hear from the defendant that night?
I did.
Can you tell us when and how?
It started calling in the middle of the night. I believe it was 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And when he first called, I said, don't call me at 3 o'clock in the morning. He was crying and saying, it's David with you. I know David's with you. And I said, if you continue to call me, I'm going to call the police. And I hung up on him.
Did he continue to call?
He did.
Did he call the police?
No, I did not.
Why not?
Well, I just hope the threat of calling the police would stop him from, you know, harassing me. But I just unplugged the phone and said, I didn't want to cause a lot of trouble between us. I just wanted to get on with my divorce.
Saturday, December 7th?
Yep.
Did you see David that day?
I did.
Could you tell us when, where, and approximately what time?
Well, initially, my company was having a Christmas party that we sort of considered going to, but we thought we were both too tired for that. Also, a friend of ours, Clayton Turner, was having a party that night that was a bit in contention because I had been invited, David had been invited, and Scott Davis had been invited as well. So we considered going to Clayton's party, but we figured it was too much hassle as well. So we decided to stay home, cook dinner, rent a movie.
Did you have a conversation with the defendant about attending Clayton's party?
Yes, we did.
When did you have that conversation?
Prior to the party, he called me up and said that he didn't want me to go to the party. And I said, that's fine, I won't go to the party, but I can't speak for David. You know, David was invited to, if he wants to go, that's up to him. And if Mr. David felt uncomfortable with that, then maybe he should be the one that didn't attend the party.
At some point, did you have another discussion about whether you were going to attend the party with David or not?
I called the defendant on Saturday night, I believe it was about 6 o'clock, to say that we weren't going to go to the party, and if he wanted to go, he could go. He called me back at about 10 p.m. that night. I didn't pick up the phone because I had a car ID. And he left a message thanking me for allowing him to go.
And why would you call him to let him know you went out of the party?
Because he seemed like he wanted to go, and I didn't think it was fair if we weren't going, that he shouldn't be allowed to go.
What time did David get, you said you stayed in and cooked dinner. Whose place were you at? Your place or David's?
My place.
The Fernwood apartment?
The Fernwood apartment.
Approximately what time did David get to your house on Saturday, December 7th?
He got to my house right at 7 or right before 7.
P.M.?
P.M., yeah.
On Saturday night?
On Saturday night.
Are you sure of that time?
I'm very sure because I was sort of cooking a fancy meal, and I was very aware of what time we were sitting down and eating, and I didn't want him to be late, so I stressed it to him that he had to be there by 7.
And was he on time?
He was on time.
Did you stay in that evening with David?
He did, yes.
At some point on Saturday evening, did you hear from the defendant again?
I did, yes.
Tell us when and what happened.
Again, in the middle of the night, the phone call started. It was Scott. He was very, very distressed. His speech was slurred. It was obvious to me that he had been drinking. He said that he had attended Clayton's party, that he overheard people at the party talking about the fact that David was sleeping with some new girl, and he was asking, you know, are you sleeping with him? Why are you doing this? You're killing me. Why are you doing this?
Did you pick up the phone and speak to him?
The first time, I picked up the phone and spoke to him, yeah.
What did you say?
I said, again, do not call me in the middle of the night. This is harassment. Stop calling me.
Did he stop calling?
No, he did not.
What did he do?
He kept on calling back about the third time. I turned off the phone and unplugged the answering machine. My caller ID box, I believe, lodged 25 to 30 phone calls, and he was also paging me. I had a pager. And he was also leaving messages on my work answering machine, which pages me when a message is up.
Did he have your home, when I say he did the defendant have your home phone number at that time?
Yes, he did.
So he could reach you at home?
He could.
Did he know your pager number?
He did.
And could he page you?
He could.
And did he know your work number?
He did.
And these conversations Saturday night, I guess it's kind of early Sunday morning. Would the call have come in after midnight?
Yes, they did.
So that would make it Sunday, December 8th, so it's after midnight?
Okay.
I'm asking you, that was...
Yes, that was, yes.
After midnight on December 8th, 1996, estimate how many times he called you between 12 a.m. and 8 a.m.?
I probably would say 35.
You told you spoke to him once. Did he need messages other times?
I had plugged the phone in the answering machine, so he could only read messages on my work.
Work machine?
Yeah.
And did he?
Yes, he did.
And did you listen to those messages?
I did.
Did he make any mention of David in those messages?
Again, he went on that he'd been at Clayton's party, and somebody had said that David was sleeping with some woman, and again, why was I doing this? Why did I want to hurt him and not killing him? This is ridiculous. What was I doing? Why was I with him and crying and crying and crying?
Did he ask you why you weren't picking up the phone?
On that night? No, because I unplugged the phone. He didn't have the opportunity.
Back it up. Then the night before on the Friday when he was calling, did he ask you why you weren't picking up the phone?
Yeah. He always does. Just pick up the phone. He can just pick up the phone. Please pick up the phone. But then I just unplugged the phone and the ammunition.
Did he ever make any mention to David why you weren't picking up the phone?
Objection, meeting.
Yeah, he always, at that point in the weekend, he was very concerned on whether or not David was with me. And he wanted to know if David, and he kept on saying, I know David's there, I know David's there.
And was David there?
Yes, he was.
When you woke up on December 8th, were you still at your house?
We were, yes.
And was David with you?
Yeah.
At some point, did you have a conversation with the defendant once you woke up that morning?
Yes, we did.
Do you know approximately what time that conversation took place?
Well, the defendant called me sometime that morning. I believe it was 10 or so that morning. We had a long conversation in David's presence. And we, and David and I had a conversation about the situation after I got off with the defendant.
Okay, tell me about your conversation with the defendant.
He called me again about 10:30. He was crying again. Again, he was saying, why are you doing this to me? And he was asking, are you sleeping with David?
What did he say?
I said, if that's what you want me to tell you, I'll tell you anything you want to hear. I just need you to go forward with this divorce. We are not getting back together. So if you want me to say that, I will.
What was his response?
He just kept on saying, are you sleeping with him? Are you sleeping with him?
How long would you estimate you spoke with him?
Oh, I'd have to see my phone record, so it seemed like a long time at the time, but it was probably 10 minutes or so.
At any point in that conversation on now Sunday, December 8th of 1996, did you tell the defendant you were reconsidering the divorce?
Absolutely not.
You were going to get back together with him?
No.
What was your tone with him when I say him, the defendant, in that conversation?
It was very curt.
What do you mean by curt?
I just said, this is it, it's over. You know, you've got to stop these phone calls, you've got to stop the letters, you've got to stop calling me. I'm moving on with my life. You need to move on with your life.
And prior to that point, were you curt with him in previous meetings?
Early on, no. I was still feeling really bad about the situation and hoping that he would realize that we weren't meant to be together. You know, we were miserable when we were together. And we had tried this since I was 19 years old. And we had never been able to make it work. And I didn't believe that we were ever going to make it work. And so, yes, at first I would accept his phone calls. And at first, you know, I think I agreed to meet him once or twice and hope that he would come to the same conclusion that I had about our relationship, that it was broken and it couldn't be fixed. towards the end of November, beginning of December, probably more mid-November, I was becoming more curt with him and not accepting his phone calls, not calling him back, not engaging him.
After your conversation with the defendant on Sunday, December 8th of 1996, did you do something to your phone?
Yeah, after sort of that weekend, because it was so intense, Monday morning, first thing, I changed my phone number to an unlisted number. I also called my divorce attorney.
And what did divorce attorney do?
Well, I sort of held off forcing the issue to attorneys because, A, I was just hoping that Scott would come to the same conclusion that I would, and, B, it was very expensive to engage attorneys on both sides. So I was trying to avoid that as well. But at that point, I was just wanting to get it over with. So I called my attorney and I said, get it done. I don't care what you have to do. Get this divorce done.
Did David leave your house that Sunday morning?
He did.
Approximately what time? 2 o'clock?
I believe it was close to 11 a.m.
Where did David go when he left your house?
He was going home to take a shower. We were going to go out for brunch.
And did David make it home?
He did.
At some point after David got home, did you receive a call from David?
I did.
And you can't tell us what David said to you for that Tuesday, but I need you to tell us, based on what David said to you over the phone, what did you do?
I had just gotten out of the shower, so I threw some clothes on, and I went directly to his house.
So let me know, how far away was David's house from where you lived on Fernwood Apartment, approximately?
A couple miles, 3-4 miles.
And how far was David's place on West Conway Drive from your marital home on Battleview?
Probably, I've never tracked it, but probably fairly similar.
Do you mind?
Yeah, 3 or 4. 5 miles
from there. So you went over to David's house after that phone call?
I did.
What did you observe when you got to David's house that Sunday morning day?
I drove up the driveway, the front door was open. Parked up at the top of the driveway, the garage door was open. Came inside to find David.
When you found David, first of all, thank you this. Did the Atlanta Police Department eventually respond to David's house while you were there that Monday morning?
They did.
And were you there when the police got there?
I was.
When you got to David's house that Sunday the 8th, did you see any damage to David's home?
Yes.
Did you tell the members of the jury what you saw?
When I got there, he had a study office right off his living room, and he had a big green freestanding TV that was pushed over and smashed. His desk was open and wires were everywhere and part of his computer was gone. Some of his stereo equipment, I believe he was missing, and some other personal items. So the house, at least the study area, was the most kind of trashed.
Did you see a caller ID box there that day?
No, it was missing.
And did David have caller ID?
He did, yes.
When you got there that Sunday the 8th, did you see David's red folder there?
No, it was gone.
And that Saturday night when he came over, what car was he driving to your house that night?
His white Jeep Cherokee.
Now, did David have other items of value in his home?
Yes, he did.
And were they still there when you got there on Sunday the 8th?
No, some personal jewelry items, watches and things were taken, and some guns were taken.
Were other items left at home?
Yeah, there was the BMW that was left behind.
Mm-hmm.
The living room didn't seem to be that disturbed. The kitchen didn't seem disturbed, the dining room didn't seem disturbed. It was mainly the study and the bedroom.
Were there other TVs there
that
were not taken?
I can't recall.
Were there other items of value left behind?
Yes, like a computer monitor was still left behind, hard drive was taken. And some of parts of his stereo equipment, things like that.
And did you see David speaking to the Atlanta Police Department about this incident?
Yes, I was there.
Do you know what forced entry is?
Yes.
Okay. Well, what is your definition of forced entry?
A smashed window or a broken down door.
Okay. Did you see, when you were at David's house that Sunday morning at 8, did you see any forced entry?
No, I did not.
Did you see any broken windows?
No, I did not.
Did you see any doors kicked in?
No, I did not.
Did David have any habits as far as locking his car?
You know, he would usually, I don't know, I didn't pay a huge amount of attention, but he seemed pretty, you know, he didn't seem all that concerned about it. Generally, we would go out of the garage door, which led into the kitchen, go out to the cars, and if he was taking the Porsche, he would just use his clicker, get in and out, but he wouldn't get out of the car and then lock it.
Did David have an alarm on his house?
Not to my knowledge, no.
And may I approach the witness room?
You may.
I'm showing you what we need to remark with seven or the interview to my evidence. Can you tell me, first of all, do you know where David would keep his keys in his house?
Yeah, you can see it in the picture. There was a little key rack that was on a cabinet in the kitchen that was right next to the door that led out into the garage.
And that's where he kept his keys?
Yes.
May I approach in public? Yes. Mr. Rubin, when was the last time you actually saw Rubin?
We went to brunch after the police left. And then we drove back to his house where I got my car, and that was the last time that I ever saw him.
I want to direct your attention to Monday, September 9th of 1996. You already told us you changed your phone number that day.
Yes, I changed it, and I changed it immediately.
Did you speak with David Coffin that day on Monday the 9th?
Yeah, I spoke to him approximately 3 times.
And do you recall the times that you spoke to him?
I spoke to him, I think, a couple of times in the morning after I did each thing, after I changed my phone number and after I called my divorce attorney and told him to get it done. I called him then around, I believe, 2 o'clock in the afternoon and just was checking in about how he was going. He was doing some insurance stuff for the break-in, and at that point we discussed possibly getting a Christmas tree that evening.
And how did you leave it with him?
He said that he'd give me a call.
Objection.
Yes. I'm going to try to rephrase that, and it is a statement of future intention, but let me see if I can try to rephrase that. What were you going to do Monday night, December 9th?
I wanted to get a Christmas tree, but my car wasn't big enough, so I was hoping to use David's car.
And did you discuss that with him?
I did.
And did you have plans with him?
Tentative plans, yes.
How often would you speak to David at this point in your relationship?
Pretty much daily, yeah.
On Monday night, did you try to contact David?
I did.
How did you do so?
I called him from my phone at home, and I left him a message on his answering machine.
And did you ever hear back from him?
I did not.
Did you go to the Christmas tree with David on Monday, December 9th?
No, I did not.
Would you, your phone gets from David to the defendant, Scott Davis. Did you have a conversation with him on Monday, December 9th of 1996?
I did.
And how did you do so?
At first, he left a message, I believe, on my voicemail at work, which paged me, and he said that he had a bill that he needed to discuss with me, and that please give him a call. So I gave him a call.
Tell us about your conversation Monday night, December 9th, 1996. What did you say?
I called him, and I asked him if he knew that my phone had been changed to an unlisted number. He indicated that he understood that because he had tried to call, and he said that was probably a good thing because it would keep him from being tempted to call me anymore. And he also went on, I said, you know, I called my attorney and I want to get this divorce done. At that point, he said, let's have 3 weeks. Let's have 3 weeks of no talking. He said, you're so used to hearing me tell you how much I love you every day. Maybe 3 weeks away, without us talking, without us seeing each other, you will realize that you miss me. Or you will realize that you do want to go forward with this, because maybe I'll realize that, you know, I don't want you in my life. So he said, please just give me 3 weeks. And I said, I'll think about it.
And what was your thinking about during this time?
It was very rational and very, very calm.
Were you fine?
Nope.
And when you said you would think about it, 3 weeks of what?
Just not talking to each other, because all that time we've been calling. So he said, let's have 3 weeks where I won't call you, you don't call me, we don't see each other, let's just have 3 weeks away from each other.
And what would that do with the divorce?
He said he needed those 3 weeks, and he felt that I needed those 3 weeks just to make the final decision.
Tuesday, December 10th, 1996. Do you remember that day?
I do.
And how is it that you can remember that day?
Because a lot of bizarre things happened that day, including me becoming aware of David's death.
Did you hear from David at all on Tuesday, December 10th, 1996?
No, I called him from work during the day, and I called and left a message that evening for him, and I had not heard back from him.
That is usual?
Yes, very.
Did you hear from the tenant that day? That day?
That evening, yes, I did.
Approximately what time was it that evening that you heard from him, and what were you doing that time?
A girlfriend called me up early evening to ask if I wanted to go out to dinner with her.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Bobby, what's your girlfriend's name?
Tina.
Tina, what's her last name?
Toya.
Toya?
Toya.
And that's H-O-Y-A. And she called you, and you went where?
We went to a sushi restaurant in Buckhead called Nikimoto.
Where was Nikimoto located in Buckhead in 1996?
Well, it was the part of Buckhead, the center of where all the restaurants and clubs were.
What street did it run off of?
I believe it was off of Peach Street.
Do you know what time you went to dinner with Tina?
I believe it was around 6-ish.
And did anything happen while you were there?
Yeah. At first I got a page from the defendant, and I didn't answer it. And then I got a beep that somebody had left me a message on my work voicemail, and I didn't check it. And then I got a page from our neighbor, neighbor of our marital house, a gentleman by the name of Greg Gatling. It was his number with a dash and 911 after it.
And so did you return Greg Gatling's page?
I did.
And approximately what time did you return the page if you were called?
It must have been probably about 7-ish at that point, 7:30, 8 o'clock, somewhere around there.
You spoke with Greg Gatling?
I did.
Did you speak with the defendant?
Right after Greg Gatley, I talked to the defendant. Yes, I called him.
Okay. What did the defendant, when you called the defendant after speaking with Greg Gatley, I can't tell us what Greg told you.
Greg
about the hearsay. Tell us what the defendant said to you when you called him after speaking with Greg.
He said that he drove home, pulled into our carport. When he got out of the car, somebody jumped out of the carport who had a ski mask on. The person put a gun to his head, sprayed him in the face with mace, and said, stay away from Megan or next time I'm coming back and cleaning out the rest of this house. Then he said that the guy tried to take his car. He was unable to get it started, and he ran away.
How did the defendant pronounce Megan to you at that, or Megan to you, or Megan, whichever way? How did he pronounce it?
He said Megan.
Right. Do people call you Megan?
People who don't know me call me Megan.
How do you spell your first name?
M-E-G-A-N.
And how do you pronounce it?
Megan.
And is that how people who know you pronounce it?
People who know me call me Megan.
Did you ask him for a description of this person?
Yeah, I said, did you get a good look at him? And he said, well, he had a ski mask on. He said he was white and he looked like he was about 6'1 or 6'2. They said he couldn't see much because they had a ski mask on.
And what else, if anything, did you tell you about that encounter?
Well, I said, how was he unable to take your car? And he said that he had enacted, when he bought his car, he put an aftermodel sort of anti-carjacking device on his car. I can't describe it. It was a little sort of plug or key that went under the steering shaft. I had actually never seen him use it in our marriage because it was an awkward system. And I said that to him at the time. And he said, yep, isn't it ironic? He said, I had my car detailed today, and they left the car out for me after the detail, so I had taken this carjacking plug out so the guy couldn't start my car. Because it was sort of a bizarre story, and because the person had supposedly used a likeness of my name in the threat to him, I asked him if he called the police, and he said yes, and I asked for a copy of the police report.
Now, how long had the defendant had that Acura he was driving in 1996?
I believe he got it before we were married.
That anti-theft device that he discussed with you on December 10th of 1996?
Yep.
Have you ever seen him use it before?
No, never.
After you had this conversation with him, what did you do?
I got off the phone and I told my friend Tina what Scott had just told me. And then I got concerned because of the description that he used, the 6'1 or 6'2 and white. I got concerned that he was indicating that David had perpetrated this crime. And Tina suggested that I call David.
And did you call David?
I did.
And what did you do?
I left a pretty panicked message on his voicemail saying, somebody has attacked Scott, use my name, I'm really freaked out, please give me a call if I can get this message.
And did he ever return that call?
He did not.
After that, what did you do? Where did you go?
After that, I asked Tina, I said I was worried about Scott, I wanted to see if he was okay, and did she mind driving over there with me? So we paid our bill. We had both come separately. So we went downstairs. There was valet parking. Took a while. It was a busy night to get our cars. And then we drove over to Scott's house.
Do you recall approximately what time you arrived at Scott's house? And when you say Scott's house, you mean your former marital home as well?
I mean our former marital home, yes.
Do you recall what time you got there?
I believe it was about 8:45.
And how do you know that?
That's just my recollection. But if I could see my phone records, I can tell you exactly.
Were you using your cell phone that evening?
Yes, I was.
To make phone calls?
Yes.
And when you got to the defendant's house, first of all, was he there?
No, he wasn't.
Okay. And how do you know he wasn't there?
Well, I had called him on the way, and I called him in the driveway. And the house was dark, and I banged on the door.
Sheila, may I have a pay stamp number?
Actually, it's last date, February 23rd, 2005.
Was the phone registered in your name to your American residence?
I'm not sure if it was registered to my name or my, I believe it was my company. My, was flagged on my company.
As your, not your cell phone, I'm sorry, your home phone on Battleview?
Okay.
When I was there?
Yes, that was.
May I have this written?
Mm-hmm.
Just for refreshing recollection, I'm not going to mark this document showing you the document that's showing you that help. Refresh your recollection of your home phone number in 1996 on Battleview Drive when you lived there with the defendant.
Yes.
And what was that phone number?
It was 352-4048.
Is that area code 404?
It is, yes.
Now, you told us you got to the defendant's house.
Yes.
You said he was not home. Did you see his car there?
No, I did not.
Did you knock on the door?
Yes, the door to the kitchen.
Did he answer the door?
No, he did not.
Did you call?
Yes, I did.
And what time did you call him while you were there?
According to my phone records, it was 8:46.
P.M.?
P.M.
Did he answer the phone at 8:46 p.m. when you called?
No, he did not. I left a message for him.
Did you attempt to find him, the defendant, that is, in other locations once you found that he was not home?
Well, I had called him when I was en route to his house, and he didn't answer. So when I was driving over there, I called his parents' house and Greg Gatley, the neighbor's house, to see if he was there.
Okay. And do you recall sitting there today, your neighbor, Greg Gatley's phone number?
No, I do not.
Okay, could I show you something that might help? Did you know his phone number at one time?
I think I was aware of it, yes.
Can I show you something that might help refresh your recollection as to Greg Gatley's phone number in 1996?
Yes, that would be good.
And again, I'm not going to mark this, I'm just going to use it to refresh your recollection. May I also? Thank you, sir. Document I'm showing you, does that help refresh your recollection as to Greg Gatley, your neighbor, former neighbor's phone number?
Yes, it does.
What was his phone number?
It was 404-351-3160.
And slowly, because I saw that court order there, if you could slowly read that number.
404-351-3160.
Did you call Greg Gatley that night when you were standing outside the defendant's home when he was not there?
No, I believe it was on my way there.
Okay. And what time did you call Greg Gatley on your way there?
Excuse me, if she has a recollection, I'd like her to say that. If she doesn't, then she can try and refresh her recollection.
Okay,
it's not appropriate for us to read.
She can refresh her memory from the documents, and then she can answer the question.
Okay. It was about 8:30, a little after 8:30.
P.M.?
P.M., yes.
When you called Greg Gatley at about 8:30 p.m., was the defendant at Greg Gatley's house?
No, he was not.
You said that you called the defendant's parents?
I did.
When did you call them in relation to calling Greg Gatley?
Right after I called Greg, I called his parents.
So right after 8:30 p.m.?
Yes.
Did you get any warning at his parents' house?
I did. I got his father.
And did you ask if the defendant was there?
I did.
Was he there?
No, he was not.
At 8:46 p.m., who did you call?
That's when I was in the driveway, and I called the defendant's car.
And did he pick up the phone at 8:46 p.m.?
No, I got the information.
What did you do after that?
I left a message saying, please call me. I was worried about him. Page me, because at that point I changed my phone number, to page me when he got home.
Why were you looking for the defendant in the room?
Because I was worried about him.
You were going through the divorce?
Yes.
Why were you worried about him?
I cared about Scott. I just didn't want to be married to him.
Where did you go to leave his house?
I went back to my apartment.
On Furman?
Yes.
What did you do once you got home?
Make a lot of phone calls to friends and family talking about this bizarre incident that had happened to Scott.
Did you get a phone call later that evening that caused you to leave your house?
I did.
Did you tell us about what time and who it came from?
I think it was just after 11.
P.M.?
P.M., sorry. Yeah. On Tuesday night, I was getting ready for bed, and the phone rang, and it was my friend, Clayton Turner.
And did you have a conversation with Clayton?
I did.
And based on your conversation with Clayton, and let me start that. When you finally got home to your apartment that night, before Clayton called,
yeah.
You told us you made some phone calls to family and friends?
Yep.
When you got home, did you try to call David again?
Yeah.
Okay, well, approximately what time did you try to call David again?
Right after I talked to the defendant.
And when did you talk to him again?
He paged me at 9:07.
And how do you know that time?
Because it was in my pager and I kept it.
He paged you at 9:07. Where was he at 9:07 p.m.?
He said he was back at the marital house.
Okay. Did you ask him where he had been?
Yeah, I said, are you okay? I was worried about you. I said, go, why don't you go stay with your parents or with Greg? And he had indicated to me that he had gone out in search of mates because he was here.
And then was he able to find any mates?
No, he said he went to the drugstore that was sort of down the road from us, and he said they didn't have any.
What was the drugstore down the road from?
Oh, I can't remember. Sorry.
How long was the conversation with him that evening?
I believe it was fairly brief, just sort of saying, you know, I thought that maybe he should stay somewhere else than his house.
Did he agree to stay somewhere else?
He said he thought he was okay, but he didn't think about it.
What was his demeanor like at this point?
He seemed okay.
What did he mean by that?
I mean, he didn't seem scared or panicked or anything like that. He seemed okay, didn't seem really scared.
When you had spoken to him earlier, you know, before 8:30, which he had, for the first time, told you that he had been attacked?
Yeah.
What was his demeanor like then?
It was pretty rushed. You know, he was trying to tell me the whole chain of events and the whole story.
So after you got off the phone with your dependent this time at 9:07 and told you he had gone to buy me, or attempted to, did you call David?
I did.
And what happened?
I got a busy schedule.
All the times that you had attempted to call David prior to that time, on the night of December 10th, 1996, had you gotten busy signal?
No, I got his answering machine.
So this is the first busy signal you got?
Yes, well.
What time did you get the busy signal?
Again, it was sort of right after I talked to the defendant. Then I attempted to call David again.
So sometime after?
Sometime, yes. Probably 9:10, 9:15, somewhere around there.
Sorry about that. Going back to Clayton then.
Okay.
After that, Clayton called you. Well, tell us what he said. What did you do after you got off the phone with Clayton?
I got redressed because I was getting into my pajamas. And Clayton came and picked me up at my apartment.
Where did you two go?
We went to West Conway in Buckhead where David Coffin lived.
When you got there, what did you see?
The street was barricaded. It was very dark and David's house was on fire. And there was lots of, you know, emergency and fire crews there.
Had you seen David's house on fire on the TV prior to leaving the house?
No.
You had not?
No, I had not.
Were the police personnel there?
Yes.
Did you make your way into the barricade?
Yeah, they asked me if the barricade, I said, was it, I believe it was 951, West Conway, and the house was on fire, and they confirmed it was. They asked me at that point, was I the owner? And I said, no, I'm the owner's girlfriend. And they said, do you know how to get in touch with the owner? And then at that point, they were just past the barricade. And Clayton and I were at street level, on the street. And we started calling people trying to find out where David was.
What time did you make it to the street, West Common Drive, approximately?
Sometime after 11, probably between 11:15 and 11:30, I would imagine.
And how do you know it was sometime after 11?
Because it was after the 11 o'clock news.
What did you see once you got closer?
Again, I saw the hoses on David's house. I saw a lot of fire personnel. I also saw his white Jeep Cherokee parked at the top of his driveway.
Were you able to see any of David's other cars?
No.
At some point, while you were standing out there in Clayton, did anyone from the police department or the fire department tell you...
Objection. meeting.
Well,
I know, you're going to leave, so I'm objecting.
May I ask you
a question?
Did anyone from the police department or the fire department tell you anything about the status of the person who owned that house that was on fire?
No, they asked if we knew how to contact him. They did ask if he had a dog at one point.
While standing outside David's house, Ms. Burton, did you eventually learn that there was a body in the house?
Yes, I did.
How did you learn that?
Somebody, I believe, at the time, I'm not sure who he was, but I believed him to be like a fire chief. He wasn't in full fireman uniform, but he seemed to be the official person on the scene. Came up to me and he asked me if I was the next of kin.
What did you tell him?
I said no. And he said, we said, I was my girlfriend. And he said, well, we found the body in the kitchen.
How did you respond to that news?
I remember being pretty hysterical, falling to the ground, lying on the pavement. Asking him, how can a grown man die of fire when he's awake? And that he didn't die of fire. I said, what do you mean he didn't die of fire? He said, that's all I can tell you, he did not avoid fire.
You take it on.
Yes.
The same number that you had read off to us before?
The same one, yes.
Did he answer the phone?
Immediately, yes.
Did you speak with him?
I did.
And what did he say to you?
I just remember being quite hysterical, saying, David said, somebody burned his house down, and I could hear in the background radio, like walkie-talkie kind of thing. And he said, oh my God, the police are here with me. And they said they had just come from a scene in Buckhead where a guy had been shot in the head and his house had been burned down. And then he went on to say that he had been getting ready for bed and our dog, Mutt, started barking. And he went out to go see what Mutt was barking about. And he realized the back of our house where we had French doors was on fire. And he had run outside with his shotgun. And at that point, I stopped him and I said, shotgun, I didn't know you had a gun.
And he's up there. While you lived in the home when you were married to the defendant, did you have weapons in the home?
Now, previous to our marriage, Scott had a gun, and I made him get rid of it.
So in your marital home, did you have a gun?
Not to my knowledge.
All right, go ahead.
So he said, back of the house was on fire. He went outside with his shotgun. He said somebody was running through the back part of the yard, turned around, fired at him, and he shot at this guy, and the guy ran away. And then he said he was able to put out the fire with a garden hose, and he said the police were there.
And did you hear police radios in the background?
I could. I could hear voices and police radios in the background.
So did you think the police were actually at the house?
Yes, I had no reason to disbelieve them.
What was his demeanor like, the defendant, when you had this conversation about him being shot at?
He seemed pretty excited. I mean, when I say excited, you know, talking fast. He seemed very, very surprised that, you know, the place that the police had come was actually David's house.
Did you let him know it was David's house?
Yeah, I said that, you know, I'm at David's house, he's dead, the house has been, you know, on fire, and that's when he said, you know, the police are here, and they just come and say the scene. I didn't realize that they were talking about David's house.
Now, you said he had said something to you about the person being shot. Let me ask you this. Prior to having that conversation with Scott, what was your emotional state?
I was pretty hysterical.
Were you given anything by anyone?
Craig Foster's girlfriend, who was on the scene with me, at one point said she had something. She said it was like Valium that would help calm me down. And she got me a cup of water and gave me one.
When did you take that? She said it was like Valium.
It was at the neighbor's house.
Before or after you made the phone call?
I can't remember for sure.
Yeah. And was Tish a medical person or?
No, she said she had been married to a doctor and this was a prescription that was left over.
And you took it?
I did take it.
Did that help calm me down?
I don't know, it's still pretty hysterical.
Were you asked by law enforcement later on that evening, like early, hours later, hours after this conversation with Scott, were you asked if you had told Scott that David had been shot? Or if you knew that David had been shot?
We had all gone back to Craig Foster's house. I was asleep in his guest room, and Craig woke me up, and one of the homicide detectives asked me, do you know how David died?
What did he tell him?
I said no. And he said thank you and hung up.
Why did you tell him no if you had heard earlier that he had been shot?
Again, so many things were happening at that time. I went from focusing on David was dead, his house was on fire, to somebody attacked Scott and shot at him and lit his house on fire. So that information came immediately. I was not focusing at that point how David died. And at that time, it seemed like if the police were there, that's what they told them. It seemed like it was coming from an official source. So I hadn't registered at that point too much going on at night.
Did Scott tell you that the police had told you that?
Excuse me?
I'm sorry. Did Scott tell you that the police had told him that the victim had been shot?
Yes, that night he said the police had just come from a house fire in Buckhead where a guy had been shot in the head and his house had been burned.
Did you take any other values that evening? Or feel like values?
Well, when I got back to Craig's house, I was pacing and I said I didn't think I could sleep. And then Tish gave me another one to help me sleep.
And did you take that second one before you spoke to the police on the side when they called you back?
Yes, ma'am.
To ask you if you knew how they did the value? Going back to the neighbor's house, after you talked to Scott, did you call any other people?
I believe I called my parents back. I let them know that Scott had been attacked and his house had been set on fire and somebody had tried to shoot at him as well. Then I got off the phone with them, and at some point when we were discussing leaving the neighbor's house and where everybody was going to go, Craig and Clayton asked me if I wanted to go home or did I want to go to a friend's house. And I thought maybe I didn't want to go home, so I called a friend of mine, Jen Genicova.
And that's the same Jen Genicova that you talked to us about before?
Yeah.
And did you tell her what had happened?
Yes, I went through the whole stream of everything that had happened.
And did you ask to stay with her?
Yes, I did.
And were you allowed to stay with her?
She got nervous because she said if somebody was after me, that one of the places they would look was her house. And she said maybe, you know, you shouldn't come here.
So where did you go then?
Then I went back to Craig Foster's house with Clayton and Fish.
At some point, were you called to give a statement to the Atlanta Police Department, a formal statement that morning?
Yes. We had left the neighbor's house. We were going to Craig's house. Clayton got a call on his cell phone that homicide was there, that they wanted to talk to us, and that we'd please turn around and come back to the scene of the fire.
If you got to the scene of the fire at approximately 11:15, you told us, about what time do you think it was where you were leaving with Craig and Clayton, and you got the call to come back to the scene from homicide?
Probably about 1:30 in the morning.
In the morning?
Somewhere around there.
So it's now December 11th, 1996. The next day had passed. Did you go back to the scene once homicide called you back?
We did.
And did you eventually go to homicide and give a statement?
I did.
Now, do you know approximately how long you were at homicide? That evening?
Probably about 3:30 in the morning. 3:30, somewhere in there.
And the phone call that you got from homicide regarding whether you knew how David had been killed, was that before or after the formal statement?
That was after my formal statement.
And about what time do you think they called you to ask you that question?
Probably about 5:30 or so in the morning. I have no idea, because I was going to speak.
You were asked that question at 5:30 in the morning by homicide if you knew how David killed. You said no. Did you at one point find out that you in fact had learned that David had been shot?
Yes.
When did you first learn that you had said that?
I was talking again. I went after all this happened. I went home to my parents' house in Washington, D.C. Sometime while I was there, I had a conversation with Jen Genicova, and we were talking about that evening's event, and she mentioned to me that I had mentioned to her, when I was going through everything that happened, that David had been shot in the head.
And do you have any reason to disbelieve your friend Jen Genicova that you had said that?
No, I have no reason to disbelieve her.
When you learned that you had told, that Jen told you that, what did you do then?
I called the DA.
And who was the DA at the time?
Joe Burford.
What did you tell him?
I said, my friend Jen, who I spoke to the night of the fire, recalls me telling her that David had been shot in the head that night.
May I approach the second one?
Yes.
When was the last time, prior to stepping foot in this courtroom today, when was the last time you had seen the defendant got it?
He was brought into homicide offices morning when I was there.
So you saw him then?
I visually saw him then.
And did you and he exchange words at that time?
We did not.
At some point, did you pull your answering machine tape and give it to the homicide detective?
Yeah, I think a week or a couple of days after David's death, I went home to retrieve some clothes because my mother was flown into town and we were staying in a hotel. And I just wanted to see what was on my answering machine tape. Later realized that there were some messages from the defendant, so I took it out and gave it to the police.
And did you also play or say some voicemail messages that the defendant had left on your work machine?
Yeah, the voicemail from, I believe, Tuesday night and Wednesday morning after we left homicide office, I saved and the police reported.
Tuesday night would be Tuesday, December 10th, 1996?
Yes.
And you left a message for you Wednesday morning, December 11th, 1996?
Yes.
Okay, were you present when the police reported those messages from your machine?
I had to access it.
You accessed it for them?
Yes.
Your answering machine at home, could you tell us how that worked?
It was a pretty basic model, play, play, rewind, stop, you know, for the tape message. So, pretty basic.
And did it have a microcassette or a big cassette?
Small microcassette.
Would you have the habit of recording over old messages?
Yeah, because Scott was taking up quite a lot of answering machine tape time, so I had to sort of rewind a lot to make sure they're still learning the messages.
And did you save or have saved when you went home to your apartment that day all the messages that Scott?
Yeah, I just took it out of the machine and handed it out to the police.
And you know approximately when the messages were left?
I think most of the messages on the tape, my answering machine tape, were from a week or so before David's murder.
Okay.
All the ones that he left on Friday and Saturday night, I erased and recorded over because he sort of switched.
May I have this witness, Your Honor?
Ma'am.
I'm showing with the mark of identification for State Exhibit 37. Do you recognize State 37?
It looks like the answering machine tape.
And if that was the case, you would have taken out of the machine and handed to the Atlanta Police Homicide Detective?
Yes.
In 1996?
Yes.
And prior to being here today, have you had an opportunity to listen to that tape again?
Yes.
And did you recognize the voices on that tape?
Yes.
Did you recognize all the voices on that tape?
The majority of them, yes.
And at this time, Your Honor, State will submit State 37 and request permission to publish.
Okay.
Objection.
Okay, it's admitted. Is this the time for us to Would you prefer to look at?
I'm at the court's pleasure. It's probably 15 minutes for the entire case, maybe 20 minutes. But I'll leave it up to the court to begin.
Well, okay, well, let's go ahead and if you want to.
Okay, we're not going to take down the tape, right?
Okay,
you'll leave it, man.
Okay, well, thank you, gentlemen. As I said several occasions, so we tried to break the law about 5 o'clock, and it's about 5 o'clock. So we will recess for the day. Remember, tomorrow, we'll be back here at 9:30, and we're going to recess tomorrow at 12:30. So have a nice evening.
Donna, same instruction to Ms. Bruton?
Yes.
Thank you, Jim. I was going to do that, another record.
Okay.
You going to the restroom?
No.
Okay.
Cold and paperclip.
clean set.
Okay.
You can take them out of the discovery. Typical discovery, wherever you want to.
I don't have gym stuff, but I'd like to go if you don't mind cruising by my place.
We'll pack up and we'll come back.
Are you going to be able to show me your shoes? Because you're going to get me able to be able to get you back while you're in the bathroom. You're going to have to break.
No, I got the gym. Thank you.
Oh,
you got me.
Oh, no, that's why I went down to my room. Let's put up this picture down here.
Thank you.
Not a good sandwich.
She calls me back.